Good afternoon. This is Chair Ruth Richardson, and pursuant to House Rule 10.1, I call this remote meeting of the Education Policy Committee to order. The clerk will take the roll for attendance.
Chair Richardson?
Present.
Vice Chair Hassan?
Present.
Representative Erickson?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Present.
Representative Bennett?
Present.
Representative Berg?
Present.
Representative Bell?
Present.
Representative Christensen? Representative Christensen? Representative Edelson? Representative Edelson? Representative Feist?
Present.
Representative Frazier?
Present.
Representative Jordan?
Present.
Representative Keeler?
Present.
Representative Moeller?
Present.
Representative Mueller?
Present.
Representative Poston?
Present.
Representative Scott, excused. Representative Erdahl?
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Present.
Representative Christensen? Representative Edelson?
Present.
Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Up next, we have the minutes from the February 24th meeting to approve. Representative Bennett, have you had an opportunity to review the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, and I move those minutes.
Thank you. Any discussion to that motion? All in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The minutes are approved. Okay. An overview of what we expect within the remote environment with a limited live streaming capacity. We will not be continuing into the evening. We're going to stick with our time with the hour and a half that we have allocated for Monday's meeting. And on Wednesday, if necessary, we will roll over to Friday if we need additional time for the tentative time that we all have on Friday's calendar for an additional hearing. So we should have more information on Wednesday as to whether that hearing will be needed. First on the calendar today, we have House File 909. Vice Chair Hassan, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. I move House File 909 to be laid over.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. And we are setting a time to lay this bill over no later than 1:25 p.m. Vice Chair Hassan, to your bill.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I first want to thank you for the opportunity to present House File 909, which pertains to students' absence due to religious holidays. This is the third time I'm presenting this bill. The last 3 years I've been here, and I hope that sheds a light on how imperative this is for me and for many others. This is a very simple bill, and I hope we keep it that simple. It does two things. First thing that it does is it deals with students' absence from school for religious observance. Reasonable efforts must be made by school district to accommodate any pupil who wishes to be excused from curricular activity for religious observance. A school board must provide annual notice to parents of the school district's policy relating to a pupil's absence from school for religious observance. The second thing it does, it deals with school calendar. A school board may consider the community's religious observance when adopting an annual school calendar. With that, I have some folks who are in the education field and who wish to explain to us why this is important to their students. We can move to testifiers, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Up first for your testifiers, I have Sharon Alameen with Minneapolis Public Schools.
There you go. Greetings. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for the opportunity to come before you and speak on this important bill today. So again, thank you for your work to ensure all Minnesota voices and perspectives are heard in our state legislative. My name is Sharon Alameen. I serve as the District 2 Minneapolis School Board Director. I also come before you as a Muslim, as a mother, as one who's been actively involved in my community. I come before you to strongly encourage you to support the religious bill, the HF 909. Again, this bill will allow us in our districts to recognize the observance and to adopt the religious holiday on our calendars. It will allow our families to feel included. It will allow our community to understand the importance of our religious holiday. Again, we need to make sure that everyone is included. We want to make sure that our Muslim children and families have the opportunity to educate others and to feel proud as far as being a Muslims. So this bill, again, as Hudan has stated, will allow us the opportunity to be included for the school districts to adopt this bill and allow a religious holiday to be added on the calendars as we move forward. So again, I come before you as a Muslim, as the district representative for Minneapolis School Board District 2, as a proud Muslim, mother of three, asking for your support to strongly pass this bill to help our Muslim families to be recognized on the calendars here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, I have Dr. Julie Henderson.
Good afternoon, everybody, and thank you, Chair and Vice Chair, for inviting me to speak on this bill. And I just want to echo what my sisters, Representative Hassan and Ms. Alameen, mentioned. My name is Julie Henderson, and I'm the Executive Director of a public charter school in Minneapolis. And I serve 400 students, K-8, in two campuses. I was born and raised in Minnesota. I've been a public school educator for 31 years. My doctorate is in LEP, or English Language Learner Policy and Assessment, and I have a background in school leadership. I went into education not only because they paid me to do something I loved, but also because of my great-grandfather who emigrated at the turn of the 20th century in a sheepskin cloak and not much else. And I see the story of my great-grandfather and so many others in the faces of the students that I serve every day. And as you know, this bill is important to the communities across Minnesota who are grappling with what it means to fit in. And Isaiah and Mass have been advocating for this legislation for many years. And our Representative Hassan has, as she mentioned, introduced it several times. As a public school leader, the religious holiday bill is not merely hollow words. Although there's no net fiscal impact to the public school districts in adopting this legislation, the spirit of the language shines brightly for thousands of Minnesota public school children who want to feel included within the fabric of their very own communities. And now more than ever, we need inexpensive, inclusive solutions to unite us as one Minnesota. The whole world is not one religion, of course, but we are one community. And by addressing the needs of those who public schools serve, through this legislation, we're one step closer to equity and justice and equality. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Moving on to public testimony, we have one testifier currently signed up, Ethan Roberts.
Madam Chair, I think Ethan is muted.
I am sorry. That was my fault. I pressed my own mute button. Okay, so let's start again. So I'm Ethan Roberts, and yes, Representative Edelson, I know. So sorry. I am the Director of Government Affairs for the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota and the Dakotas. And we are the nonpartisan or bipartisan public affairs voice for Minnesota's Jewish community. And in this work, we are asked often by members of the Jewish community to help us work with school districts to reach reasonable accommodations around conflicts between the Jewish calendar and the school calendar. And it's been our experience, having done this work for several decades, that the school districts where this is easier, where it works best for everyone, are the districts which act proactively rather than reactively. And so what I like about this bill is that by requiring districts to publicize a policy, it means, well, first of all, they have to have a policy, which would be helpful, right? And so it means that they're thinking in advance, what are the calendars of the students who are in our district? Do we have a lot of Jewish students? Do we have a lot of Muslim students? Do we have a lot of students from other religious traditions where this might be a conflict? And now they're already thinking about it well before someone like from my organization has to come to them and say, oh, by the way, this is going to be a problem. The second part of the bill, which I think is helpful, is, and I realize it uses the word may, and I am an attorney, and so I know the word may means may or may not, but by just saying that it may take into consideration the calendar of religious holidays, I think it might provide clarity to school boards that this is something they can do, that this does not create a conflict, for example, with the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. There's nothing wrong with including, when you include many factors, religious calendaring. And so, as Representative Fasan said, this is a relatively simple bill. And I think then, you know, it does a couple of things which are helpful. And it's not just going to be helpful for families and students. I think ultimately it'll be very helpful for districts. Because again, when we work proactively and thoughtfully, we reach better solutions for everyone rather than we have to act reactively. That's not good for anyone. So thank you again. And my apologies. I can't believe I had the mute button on. That's pretty embarrassing. But anyway, thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else logged into the Zoom meeting today who would like to testify for or against this bill? Okay. Hearing none, we'll go to member questions and discussion. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question for Ethan Roberts is this. Is there anything in law right now that bars school districts from placing religious observances on their calendar? I imagine it's negotiated with the bargaining unit, but I don't think there's anything in law that prohibits this. So do you think this is comfort language or, but first, answer that first question that I asked. Thank you.
No, I believe Representative Erickson, and it's good to see you. We've worked really well in the past on several measures. No, there's nothing in law that prevents a district from doing this. And I could tell you, for example, I live in the Wayzata School District, and this year we have a conflict. Rosh Hashanah, which is one of the most holiest Jewish holidays, mm-hmm. happens to be the first day of school because it's the day after Labor Day. The Wayzata District was very proactive, and so we really didn't have to lobby them at all. Other districts were less so. But I think it's more of a comfort language because it does have a requirement that they publicize their policy, which means that they have to have a policy. So I would say between this zone of you can't do something and you need to do something is where this bill fits in. And so while, yes, many districts like, let's say, Wayzata or, you know, other districts which I think have been really good, Minnetonka, Osseo, have been proactive, there are other districts which might need this language to do something which would be helpful for them. And so I do think it's more than just symbolism. I think it actually has a real benefit. On the latter point, as I said earlier about May, you know, sometimes there's a lot of confusion about the First Amendment. There's a lot of confusion about the intersection of the Establishment Clause and the Free Exercise Clause. And I think it would be comforting for school boards to know that the legislature is saying, you can do this. You don't have to, but you can. And so I really do think this bill is worthy of support. As you know, Representative Erickson, JCRC, we don't really support things which we think are highly partisan or are not worthy of support across Minnesota. We happen to think this bill is something that is something that should be broad consensus behind, hopefully.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Richardson, and thank you, Mr. Roberts, for that answer. No, this certainly is not a partisan issue. Right. This is honoring religious freedom for all of us. So I was wondering about the fact that in statute that there was, I didn't think there was anything that barred school districts from doing this. But, you know, if this is going to bring clarity, as you have pointed out, Mr. Roberts, then perhaps this is a good direction to go. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Roberts. And thank you, Representative Hassan, for being so persistent.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Edelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill. As somebody that is a part of the Jewish community, I think it's just so important. Denise, I know we, in the last year, just recognized Jewish holidays on our calendar. But again, that's our community talking to our district. So I think things like this would be really helpful because as Ethan had mentioned, there can be really big conflicts in terms of when we have school, in terms of what holidays are there. So thank you for bringing this. I'm very supportive.
Thank you, Representative Adelson. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Having been here a while in the legislature, not quite as long as Representative Erickson, Madam Chair, but I've seen this over again where members bring bills to tell local governments or sometimes individuals what they can do. I don't think policy-wise it's a good idea for us to do that. I think the understanding is that you as an individual or as a government, as long as you are operating within the confines and the direction given to you by state government, for us to populate statutes with language that tells districts what they can do or makes the suggestions, as Mr. Roberts suggested, I appreciated his testimony, by the way, Madam Chair, as he suggested that it would be suggestive. I don't know that that's a good role for the legislature or a good use of ink in our statute books. And so, Madam Chair, I'm curious, maybe the author can tell us more about, I mean, Representative Hassan, why do we need this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Drazkowski. The reason why we need this bill is, as you know, that, this country, even though we say that state and church are separate, this country, many times the laws are based on Christian religion, Christianity. We don't have school in Christmas. That's not by accident. That's by design. We don't have school on many of the important holidays, religious holidays in the Christianity of religion. So we're just saying that this is about acceptance. It's about, equity. It's about celebrating our students who are non-Christians. That's
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan. But Representative Hassan, help me understand. Do you have a school that is running into problems setting their calendar and using their discretion to use the predominant religious holidays as guidance in doing that? I can't see where there would be an issue unless I'm missing something, Representative Hassan.
Vice Chair Hassan.
Madam Chair and Rep. Drazkowski, we don't have to wait for things to fall apart for us to be proactive about creating laws and making suggestions for a school district. And that's what I'm doing. I'm just being proactive to just include other students to say that if the district is doing this already, well, thank you very much. If they're not doing it, we're suggesting them to do it. That's all there is to it.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Representative Hassan and Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Feist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to echo Representative Hassan's statement that this is about inclusion of non-Christian kids in the school calendar. I was raised Jewish in Green Bay, Wisconsin, where there are not a lot of Jewish kids. And it felt like we always had to educate the school district about when our holidays were. And it was just kind of exhausting for my mom. And, you know, just making sure that we have calendars that take into account all of the religious holidays and traditions of all of our students. It just means a lot. And like Representative Hassan said, we can be proactive about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Feist. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for bringing this bill, and thank to the testifiers for testifying. I'd just like to echo what Representative Erickson said. I think she said it best. It provides, this would provide some clarity to school districts to let them know that it's all right to be progressive and be proactive in terms of recognizing the religions of several religions that are within our school districts that have not always been recognized and haven't always been, which makes it not always a very inclusive place. So I think this clarity is something that is much needed, and it's a proactive way for the legislature to help our school districts be more inclusive and more proactive in how they create inclusive environments for our students. Just wanted to say that.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Drazkowski, I see your hand is up again.
I do, if you'd indulge me, Madam Chair.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Madam Chair, I think Representative Feist made my point. She was in a school district where her particular religion was not the predominant one in the area. The school board did their best in, I'm trying to remember if it was Green Bay, Representative Feist, or where it was, did their best in recognizing what worked for the most students in their school district, which is their role. That's their charge. That's their charter. That's what they're there for. And I would expect in Representative Hassan's district, it would be different than it would be in my district, for instance, and that those school districts would have the same ability to set the calendar that made the most sense for the most people that attend their school. Again, I don't see any need for this bill. I don't think we should be putting feel-good language in statutes. Our statutes are already about 10 feet wide if you lay them end to end, and too big and too cumbersome for the people to understand. And additionally, we need to make sure that the school districts just exercise the freedoms that we already give them.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to correct that statement because school districts are meant to are designed to support all students, not most students. And what this does is it creates a very inclusive space. I come from a lens of working in the school district for a very long time. And one of the areas that I think this is really beneficial in is around our truancy. If we have some sort of outline to understand when all of our holidays are for all of our students, we know when students will be out of school. We're not saying that we have to create all of these days off of school, but I remember there would be days, and as I was entering absences and attendance, it was helpful to know when some of our students would be gone, why they would be gone, but also to create a space where we can all celebrate each other. And so I just want to make sure that we're all clear here that school districts are designed to support all.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Vice Chair Hassan, I will give you the last word on your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you everyone for this delightful discussion. Like I said in the beginning, this is about acceptance. This is about equity. This is about celebrating our students. I am a product of public schools, and I spent most of my school years missing school and not having excuse absence because of my religious holidays. There are two important religious holidays in the Muslim calendar, holiday calendar. And I'm sure many of our Jewish students and other non-Christian students were the same. But currently, you know, there are a lot of schools that are including this, but we just can't say that because some schools are including it, then some is good enough. When we can make sure that all schools are including this, and we're not putting burden on anybody, and we're not like saying schools have to do this. We're just recommending this for schools as a tool to make sure that they're celebrating all of their students. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Vice Chair Hassan. Would you like to renew your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, I renew my motion to lay over House File 909 for possible inclusion in the Education Omnibus Bill.
Thank you. House File 909 is laid over. Up next, we have House File 1626. And I will make a motion to lay over House File 1626 for possible inclusion. And we have an estimated time of 1:40 p.m. to lay that bill over. And to the bill, House File 1626 would allow students to possess a medicine pouch with loose tobacco on school grounds. American Indians have used traditional tobacco for centuries for ceremonial, religious, and healing purposes. Traditional tobacco has both cultural and spiritual importance within the community, and this bill is, in short, about religious freedom for students. Today, I have with me Nicole McMahon to testify with me on the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and hello, members. My name is Nicole McMahon, and I'm here on behalf of District 197 as an American Indian parent. I also work for the Minnesota Humanities Center. I'm currently very involved in the district and community. I sit on the American Indian Parent Advisory Committee, the District Equity Advisory Committee, Parent Ambassadors Network, and also a couple other committees. And as Madam Chair said, tobacco is a very religious and spiritual part of American Indian culture. And for those that aren't familiar, a medicine bag is usually just a small pouch worn by American Indian people that is considered very sacred and special. And the contents are usually private and often symbolize tribal identity, personal well-being, and of a religious nature. They could hold numerous things besides tobacco, such as herbs, beads, arrowheads, really anything of spiritual value to the person wearing it. And the tobacco, as you said, there's no intent of chewing or smoking. It's typically just for its healing powers in traditional ways. And students have the freedom of religious beliefs, and prohibiting the student from wearing one or even searching its contents violates that freedom. So why is changing the language so important? This bill, as kind of the previous one, provides that clarity. It allows American Indian students to carry a medicine pouch containing loose tobacco, could contain loose tobacco, and to use it in a cultural way, again, not for intent of chewing or smoking. And not changing the current policy language would infringe on that student's religious freedoms. That's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. McMahon, for your testimony. For our public testimony, we currently have one individual signed up, Rick Heller. And it doesn't look like Mr. Heller is on the Zoom at the moment. So I will ask if there's anyone else who is logged into the Zoom meeting who would like to testify either for or against the bill. Hearing none, we'll go to member discussion and questions. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my question of you is, are there any criminal code on minors in possession of tobacco, and would this exemption to the prohibition on tobacco in public schools provide any protection to students for any potential violations?
Representative Erickson, thank you for the question. So the intent with this bill would be for again, loose tobacco, not tobacco meant to be smoked or inhaled or burned. And so the idea would be that this would be akin to a Christian student, for example, wearing a cross. So the intent is that this would not be commercial tobacco with nicotine to be smoked. Representative Erickson.
So, Madam Chair, you see no need for, I guess my question would be, how do we know what the student's intent is? I mean, is that going to cause, you know, what I would say is an unintended consequence in our public schools?
Representative Erickson, I think that the goal with this bill is really around the cultural, the ceremonial, and the religious ways that traditional tobacco has and is used. And so I think that with precedent that has been set for centuries within indigenous communities, that the use of traditional tobacco within those religious and healing purposes are set and clear. And I will also ask Ms. McMahon if she would like to add anything as well.
No, you know, thank you, Madam Chair. I think you hit all the important points. The amount of tobacco that would even be in one would be so small. And again, it's not traditional kind of mainstream tobacco. It wouldn't contain nicotine. And not all medicine pouches would even have that. That's just one thing that could be in there. And that's why we want this language in there, just to kind of cover the Native kids in case they do end up having that in their pouch. But again, the intent, the amount of tobacco would be so small that it couldn't traditionally be used to smoke or chew.
Representative Erickson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just one final comment. You know, how are other students going to know that this is an American Indian student who's provided this privilege? I mean, I can imagine, having taught many decades in public schools, that, you know, all sorts of questions arise from other students. And, you know, I don't want any unintended consequences to result if we haven't thought this out more carefully than perhaps we have so far, to protect these students and not to have others raise questions about whether or not this is part of their a cultural practice, and whether or not they are an enrolled member of a tribe or in some way identified as an American Indian. You know, I would just caution us to think through this carefully. There may be no issues with it, but when we pass policies, we want to make sure that we're not going to have unintended consequences within our school districts or our charters. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Representative Berg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to make a comment pertaining to this bill and the previous one. The birth of this nation was predicated in part on freedom of religion. Recently, I joined some of the colleagues that are in this committee today. I was invited into a Native American community to be in community and to learn. And one of the activities that we did is we gathered by the river, and each of us got a small pinch of tobacco from our host to offer up to the river and Mother Nature out of respect, out of honor, and to say a prayer and then sprinkle it into the river. As a white woman who was just invited into this incredibly amazing day and group of people, it was so moving. I cannot describe how moving that was. And that was without my identity or my soul attached to that experience, that material. And I was moved. I can imagine what that will mean to our Native American families and students to carry that on them, to have that on them. And I know just physically and scientifically that is a small little amount akin to something you might see in your spice cabinet. In no way could you do anything untoward with the way that bit of tobacco is in existence. So I think this is incredibly important. It was just such a moving thing to experience. And as we're thinking of all of our children supporting their well-being, their mental health, how they learn, having the freedom to have something that is so meaningful on them, is just, I think, one of the best things that we can do to say that we are actually honoring all of our students. I thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Berg. Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just going to make a comment that there's been something said here that I think back up the fact of why cultural inclusion in our education system is so important. To assume that there's going to be unintended consequences by wearing these pouches around our neck that are very obvious tell me that more people could be like Representative Berg and experience what this is like and the importance around this. I don't think that we need to look into this so much and divide situations here. This is something that's very, very cultural and very spiritual, and that is the full intent of it. So trying to dissect it to make it something that is not, I don't think is fair. I don't think that we get to question things back when it comes to Christianity and people wearing their crosses around in schools. So I think it's fair that we were inclusive and understanding in this conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I see this bill and the language in it as problematic. I think we're placing our administrators, the parents, the kids in a very difficult situation with this. There's going to be two standards around tobacco for kids in school, as far as I can see with this. And if I'm a white kid in school, all my genetics, 1, 2, 3, me, tells me that I came only from Europe, I'm going to carry a pouch and say I've got 1% American Indian in me. I mean, Madam Chair, what percentage of Indian blood does a kid need to have in order to carry this around?
Representative Drazkowski, just a point for clarification, when we're talking about traditional tobacco, it is very different from commercial tobacco that contains nicotine and that is smoked. And so I just want to make that distinction clear. And when we're talking, I think someone may need to mute themselves. And when we are talking about American Indian students, that would be as individuals identify themselves. So that is up to the individual, and that is up to how they would identify. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Madam Chair, you just outlined what the scenario will look like in school when the rest of the kids who truly are not American Indian or maybe aren't a noticeable percentage or maybe they don't know that or never trying to adapt to liberal terminology here, Madam Chair, don't identify as being American Indian, will now suddenly identify as being American Indian. And after a while, people who are not American Indian, kids who are not American Indian, will have moved this policy then to one where ostensibly all kids can have a pouch with some whatever definition, and I don't see the definition of the tobacco being to the level that you articulated, Madam Chair. I don't see that in the bill. We're going to place our kids, our parents, and our administrators in a very difficult position with this. I don't see any problem that it's aimed to solve or will solve in the education of our kids, which is the objective of schools and education programs. I think this is not necessary, and I think it will become problematic when it's implemented in schools. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski, and I will just have a point of clarification in terms of the origins of this bill. This bill is coming specifically from students, from parents, and from school districts, as well as this is an identified need to look at being inclusive and really meeting our standards around religious freedom. And I think that, as Representative Keeler said best, we don't have this level of scrutiny around practices related to Christianity. And I think, again, it speaks to the need for us to create school environments that are going to be inclusive for all. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to be quick because we're at 1:40 and my bill is next. So just quickly, I want to just praise you. Thank you for bringing this bill. We are in a state where we have several indigenous communities within this state, several nations within this state. And the better we are, the better we will be as a state when we embrace the cultures of those that were inhabitants of this land before we know it what it is today. And I think for what many folks are raising concerns about, I see that as an opportunity for students to be educated around different cultures that they may not be aware of. And if you got a student that finds out they have heritage that they were unaware of, and now they can engage and be educated and learn more about that culture, the better we are for that, the better we are as a state, the better we are as a nation. So thank you for bringing this bill.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Representative Bennett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to thank the author for bringing this forward. I think it is an important bill and an important subject. It's a spiritual subject. It really has nothing to do with cigarettes, tobacco, and so on. I understand, you know, the medicine pouches are very sacred, very spiritual to Native Americans, and this is a religious freedom issue. I just wanted to clarify, because from what I understand from what Representative Erickson was saying, the unintended consequences, she wanted to make sure, I believe, wouldn't happen is if are there other areas of law on the books, not necessarily related to education, but related to tobacco, that would unintendedly, that's probably not a word, get Native American youth in trouble if they are carrying, the tobacco, their sacred tobacco in the medicine pouch. And so I think that's something we want to make sure doesn't happen, because I do believe this is an important religious freedom. I don't think these young people are going to go around parading their pouches like, oh, look, I have tobacco in my pouch. No, it's a very spiritual and personal thing. We need to make sure that it's done correctly so that they don't get in trouble in other ways. So that, I believe, is what we want to make sure. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. Representative Jordan.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for bringing this bill before this committee. I think it's really important that when we talk about individual liberty, we're making sure that we're actually actively pushing for all students to have that same access. One thing I know we're running out of time here, so I'll leave this up to you if it's okay to talk about this. But I was hoping to ask actually Ms. McMahon, who I know she works for the Humanities Center. The Humanities Center does quite a bit of work around talking about Minnesota's Indigenous history with their exhibit Why Treaties Matter. I was wondering if she could talk a little bit about the relationship between some of the work the Humanities Center does and why making sure students have access to these, you know, sacred and traditional medicine pouches would be important for schools.
Sure, thank you.
Ms. McMahon, I just want to note that we are past time for moving on this bill, so I can give you like 30 seconds to try to wrap that up.
And maybe sending something to the entire committee later would be helpful too, because the Manny Center has so many great resources.
Yes.
Ms. McMahon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief, and thank you for the question. Yes, the Minnesota Humanities Center, in a nutshell, we have a lot of great resources, and we strive ultimately at the end of the day to keep the humanities in education. But at the end of the day, we want students to see themselves in the curriculum and in the classroom and in the school. And that is part of what we do, is building that relationship between educators and the students. And this would be one important aspect of seeing a reflection of themselves in the classroom by having that religious freedom to wear that and wear that with pride and have that be accepted by the school. In a nutshell, we do a lot more, but I will stop there. It's an important aspect of that.
Thank you, Representative Jordan, and it looks like you are done. Representative Frazier.
Just quickly, the T21 bill removed any criminalization or end penalties for carrying tobacco. So just wanted to clear that up. I know it came up a couple of times. That will not be an issue.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. So with that, I renew my motion, and House File 1626 is laid over. We'll now move on to House File 1376. Representative Frazier, would you like to make a motion?
I would like to make a motion to hear this bill and have it laid over, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. So it looks like you have an author's amendment. Would you like to move that amendment to get it the bill in the shape that you'd like?
Yes, I would like to move that amendment, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All in favor of the amendment or moving the amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. The amendment is adopted. And Representative Frazier, if you wanted to speak to the amendment first and then to your bill, that would be great.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The amendment essentially cleared out some things. We found some errors within the original drafting that we wanted to clear up and then realign some of the subdivisions and sections to make sure it was in the shape that we want the bill to be in moving forward.
And to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Vice Chair Hassan, and committee members. Yeah, I'm happy to be here today along with Yelena Bailey, Director of Education for Pelsby, and other testifiers to present this bill, House File 1376. I also want to send positive thoughts out to Alex Liuzzi, Executive Director of Pelsby, who was unable to be with us today. I know he really wanted to be here, so we're wishing him well. This bill comes 3 years after the adoption of the tiered licensure system for teacher educators. During those 3 years, there has been constant engagement and analysis to determine what is working and what can be improved. This bill works to stabilize the areas that have provided clear and thoughtful pathways into the profession and propose changes to address the barriers, from the smallest change in Minnesota to state in a few places to promote the work of out-of-state candidates in preparation, to as big as moving content and pedagogy testing barriers out of Tier 3 requirements. I often refer to educators as nation builders. Without them, we would not have the various professions and industries that make our nation what it is. Unfortunately, in many districts, our nation builders do not currently reflect students in our classrooms. This bill seeks to help change that reality, as well as provide supports to ensure that all students will have effective teachers in their classrooms. I will not go into details of this bill because Ms. Bailey is here to provide that insight. However, I will take a moment to highlight a few things. This bill will make over 1,000 individuals qualify for a Tier 3 licensure, moving from Tier 2 to Tier 3. Just over 1,000 individuals who are currently enrolled in a teacher preparation program or have a master's degree in the content they teach would have no change to their Tier 2 status. This bill adds language to address the concerns of our shortage of CTE teachers who fill a critical and unique space in secondary education. I have heard these stories directly from stakeholders around the state and my role as a member of the Industrial Education and Economic Development Committee. Pelsby has worked with CTE stakeholders to craft language in Tier 2 that will improve the options for CTE teachers from the current law. Although this bill removes the unlimited automatic renewals for Tier 1 applicants, it does still allow for renewal above that cap when the district shows cause. The purpose is to facilitate the movement of individuals through the tiered system. Currently, Tier 1 teachers are tied to the district that supports the application. As they move through the tiers, that limitation is removed and they have the flexibility to freely explore other opportunities and share their talent and passion for educating with other students throughout the state. Even though this bill largely provides for greater inclusion and access to those that aspire to be teachers, it will require some work for others. There are currently 539 individuals that will have to apply for a Tier 1 licensure or go through the portfolio process for Tier 3. All of those individuals can and should be supported as they work to complete the portfolio process. Pelsby is partnering with Black Men Teach, Ed Evolving, League of Latinx Educators, and others to help these educators get the support they need. All of these stakeholders are dedicated to ensuring our students have effective teachers in the classroom. Lastly, no one will be removed from the classroom in this bill, and many more people will be added to the classroom. Instead, this bill does more help. This bill helps more individuals from Tier 2 to a Tier 3 pathway, as well as including a BA exemption, and other smaller changes to increase access to more individuals. I do not believe this bill will be the panacea to addressing the dearth of BIPOC teachers within the profession, nor will it cure our one of the worst in the nation education gaps, but instead it is another tool to help address these issues. Chair Richardson, now I would like to turn it over to Ms. Bailey to discuss the bill in more detail.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Ms. Bailey, to your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and thank you for having me here. My name is Elena Bailey. I'm the Director of Education Policy for the Professional Educator Licensing and Standards Board. As Representative Frazier mentioned, this bill is rather comprehensive and includes both larger proposals as well as small technical changes. Overall, the purpose of this bill is to strengthen tier licensure, to enhance teacher preparation accountability and reporting, and to increase the board's capacity to carry out the duties delegated to it by the legislature. Instead of going section by section, I will provide an overview of the bill, highlighting key changes. So to start, I'll talk about changes in board operations. PELSB is responsible for overseeing all teacher preparation programs leading to licensure in Minnesota, as well as the licensure of teachers, substitutes, and related service providers. This includes overseeing licensure renewal and compliance, as well as reviewing ethics complaints. This work is done by PELSB's mighty staff of 22. The board itself is currently comprised of 11 volunteer members who rigorously carry out their duties through board and committee work. PELSB proposes adding two teacher members to the board in order to better facilitate the board's work, as well as to ensure there is a strong representation of classroom teachers on the board. Additionally, this bill clarifies the role of the teacher preparation member and expands the criteria for the administrator of a cooperative unit to meet the intent of the position while ensuring there are sufficient qualified candidates in the state. The second operational proposal is an increase of the licensing fee from $57 to $85. This amount simply adjusts the current licensing fee for inflation, since it has not changed since 2003. It also ensures the revenue collected for the general fund aligns with the allocation to PELSB from the general fund. The second overarching theme of this bill is to enhance teacher preparation accountability and reporting. This bill combines and replaces two separate statutes pertaining to teacher preparation in alignment with PELSB's efforts to ensure all approved programs, whether they are offered at institutes of higher education or alternative providers, are viewed as legitimate pathways. Previously, these statutes separated traditional teacher preparation and alternative teacher preparation, despite the fact that both should and are now required by administrative rule to meet the same state standards for approval. The second change regarding teacher prep is related to 122A.091 subdivision 1. That outlines data to be collected on teacher preparation. This bill proposes improving the quality of data collected from prep providers and discontinuing the district reporting. Current parameters around district reporting provide little in the way of useful data. For example, districts are currently required to report probationary teachers who are let go and identify where they were prepared. However, teachers are let go for a number of reasons, such as budgetary restrictions, and these are not necessarily a reflection of the teacher's preparation or effectiveness. A better source of this information is the survey data collected on all newly inducted teachers by teacher preparation providers in the data summary report. Changes proposed in this bill would strengthen the data by using information reported by districts and program completers through the Common Metrics Survey. This bill also makes reporting language inclusive of alternative providers. This bill includes a number of adjustments to the tiered licensure system that will provide needed flexibility for districts, increase teacher support, and strengthen the quality of teachers in Minnesota classrooms. Many districts have expressed a need for flexibility when it comes to licensing educators in the performing arts and world languages. Under this proposal, these individuals, most of whom would have been considered non-licensed community experts under the old licensure system, will now be able to obtain a tiered license in a comparable way to CTE teachers. This bill also includes a number of provisions intended to help teachers move up the tiered system, such as by requiring that Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers receive mentorship and professional development designed to help them obtain a Tier 3 license. With that added support in place, this bill would modify the requirements for a Tier 2 license by removing the option to qualify by graduate credits and testing. Tier 2 would then be for educators who have advanced content expertise, such as having a master's, and those enrolled in teacher preparation. We also partnered with career and technical educator stakeholders to craft specific language in Tier 2 that meets their unique needs. They would be eligible for a Tier 2 license based on 2 years of teaching experience with unlimited renewals. With the additional support and clarifications to Tiers 1 and 2, this bill modifies the requirements for a Tier 3 license by removing the option to qualify based on 3 years of experience and allowing those who completed prep out of state to qualify. These changes ensure that anyone who holds a Tier 3 license has demonstrated their ability to meet state standards by completing a portfolio or teacher preparation. Today, you will likely hear from testifiers who will say that allowing teachers to obtain a Tier 3 license without evidencing pedagogical and content knowledge is the only way to increase teachers of color. That is an extremely dangerous narrative that perpetuates the idea that people of color are somehow less capable than their white counterparts. In reality, it is not our ability that is the issue, but rather the structural barriers that prevent us from achievement. Pelsby supports removing those barriers to build a teacher workforce that is not only diverse, but equitable. You are also likely to hear from testifiers today that their skills and experience should be counted when considering their qualifications for a Tier 3 license. To that, we say yes and. Yes, you have unique expertise and experiences that make you an expert in your content area. And we want to ensure you have the support and pedagogical training to put those skills to use in serving Minnesota students. If teacher prep is not the best path, then Pelsby would love to support you through the portfolio process. Unfortunately, many Tier 1 and 2 educators have been dissuaded by the idea that the portfolio is too costly or too difficult a pathway. To address that, Pelsby has initiated a partnership with several educational organizations to better support cohorts of portfolio applicants and to help them document their success while they are teaching. This would mean that they would receive guided support while creating their portfolio during the 6 years they have a Tier 2 license. They can actually apply after the first 2 years and then become eligible for a Tier 3 license. Additionally, we are working on fee waivers for applicants for whom the cost is a barrier. As I've hopefully made clear, Pelsby is not interested in keeping good teachers out of the classroom. Instead, we are committed to helping those teachers meet state standards and stay in the classroom because we know they are capable of doing so. In addition to the modifications of Tiers 1 and 2, this bill also proposes moving the requirement to pass content and pedagogy exams to Tier 4. This would allow individuals, especially those for whom testing is a barrier, 3 years on a Tier 3 to receive additional test preparation support from their teacher preparation program as required in statute and their district. These content and pedagogy exams would then replace the requirement to pass the basic skills exam for Tier 4 license, which we propose eliminating because there is no evidence that skills exams relate to teacher efficacy. Our proposal to remove the basic skills exam is in alignment with HF 217 and the Increased Teachers of Color Act. This proposal would help nearly 40% of Tier 2 holders who have completed teacher preparation but not yet passed their exams immediately obtain a Tier 3 license. The final changes to Tier licensure included in this bill are related to licensure renewal. This includes developing renewal requirements that are specific to Tier 3 renewal, which, with the changes previously mentioned, would be specifically for first-time teachers. We are also proposing clarity around renewal that ensures all teachers must complete the required cultural competency training and meeting the needs of multilingual learners. The bill includes a number of smaller policy and technical changes. I'd be happy to answer any questions on those items now or at a later date. So let me close by prefacing some of the testimony you are likely to hear today. You may hear from administrator organizations who ask that the state trust in the supports they provide to teachers to replace meeting state teaching standards. At the same time, they say that requiring mentorship and adding professional development requirements is a barrier. Pelsby proposes working with districts to develop the existing supports for Tier 1 and 2 teachers in a way that ensures they can move up the tiers and obtain a Tier 3 license. This may mean partnering with their Tier 2 teachers as they complete the portfolio process, or it may mean a district becomes an alternative provider that can prepare all of its Tier 1 and 2 tier two teachers for Tier 3 licensure. In fact, we are working with the district on that right now. As Representative Frazier stated, This bill is about stabilizing tiered licensure by clarifying pathways and removing unnecessary barriers. This bill keeps the core intent of each tier. Tier 1 remains a license that allows a district to fill an immediate need when it cannot find a higher licensed teacher. However, it clarifies this as an entry point to the profession by putting in place a structure that won't just keep an individual on a Tier 1, but instead move them up the tiers and provide them with the support to stay in the profession. Tier 2 remains a license that allows a district to choose to hire an individual enrolled in preparation, which supports grow your own pathways, residency models, and other alternative preparation models where an individual would like to teach while learning. This bill also keeps this as a license that allows districts to choose to hire an individual who is a content expert, either through CTE qualifications or through a master's degree in their content area. Notably, this bill makes Tier 3 designed for teachers who have met state standards for the profession of teaching, and then includes targeted professional development to support our newest teachers. Finally, Tier 4 remains the license for a trained and experienced teacher. The most notable change to this pathway is allowing out-of-state teachers who have years of teaching experience to immediately qualify for your Tier 4 license, rather than requiring 3 years of teaching on a Tier 3 before moving up. While these changes are on one hand about stabilizing tier licensure, this is also a big picture bill. It frames how we see teaching as a profession that requires both the art of connecting with students and the science of knowing how young minds learn, how to assess that learning, how to work with diverse students in diverse settings, and how to turn content knowledge into engaging and effective lessons. It also frames how we understand the purpose of state standards, teacher preparation, and renewal. It frames whether we see teacher development and evaluation as a personnel tool for districts and teachers, or as a licensure tool. The vast majority of this bill has nearly universal stakeholder support. I hope stakeholders testifying today will let you know all of the parts of this bill that will increase pathways and strengthen supports for teachers, particularly CTE teachers, out-of-state teachers, Black teachers, Indigenous teachers, and other teachers of color. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. So members, we're going to move into public testimony now. I will let each testifier know that you will be timed for 2 minutes, and you will be given a 30-second warning as well. We will get through as many individuals as we can, and if we run out of time, we encourage folks who have not already to submit written testimony as well. So first up, we have Robert Scripture, and on deck, we have Anthony Holloway.
Hello. Thanks, everyone, for giving me the opportunity here. My name is Rob Scripture. I've been in education for 27 years. I've been a principal for the last 15 years, and specifically the last 6 years, I've been at a Phoenix Academy and Rail Rochester Academy for Independent Living, where every student in my building's a special needs student. And I guess my main message to you today is I'm for opening up as many ways as possible to get people into the teaching profession. Frankly, I can't get applicants. I don't want teaching to end up be like we currently have 8 openings for paraprofessionals, full-time jobs, benefits that I can't even get people to apply for. And I worry that creating all these different layers and all these different barriers make it really challenging to get teachers. The last 5 openings I've had in my buildings, I haven't had 5 applicants. I have to search through all the other areas to try to pull people in, to try to convince them. I was lucky enough to get Anthony Holloway, who qualified into one of these tiers where he hadn't went to college for. He'll speak to you next. You're going to see what kind of human being he is and what kind of teacher he is when he talks. We can teach you how to teach math and teach you how to teach reading. I can't teach you to have a passion for kids. Okay, and if you're willing to come in and work with us, we can make that happen. I'm in this profession, and I just listen to this bill, and I'm confused. I want to make this as easy as people for people to get in, so we can open up for people of color, we can help for different genders, all types of different beliefs, but we got to start getting people in. It's a profession that's dying. Even in the elementary world, where we used to get hundreds of candidates, we're not anymore. Yes. We need to find a way to open it up for people. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to talk.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Anthony Holloway, and on deck, we have Ideal Abdul.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Anthony Holloway. I'm a Tier 2 teacher in Rochester. Simply put, House File 1376 is trying to take away my teaching license. As a Tier 2 teacher on the precipice of earning a permanent teaching license, I am terrified of the fact that House File 1376 would take away my chances of renewing my Tier 2 license and eliminate my pathway to permanent licensure. I am aware of how Tier 2 teachers are perceived. We are vilified as people responsible for diluting the teaching profession and whose unqualified presence endangers the education of those most in need of quality teachers. For a profession that averages burnout after 5 years, I can tell you the road is exhausting, but not because I'm unqualified, I'm simply hard at work. I'm finishing my 5th year as a special education teacher, working with students who have emotional behavior disabilities. Those talking down about Tier 2 teachers don't see the relationships I've built with students classified as hard to reach. They don't see the 41 hours of graduate teacher education courses I completed, or that I co-founded an equity leadership team at my building to address inequities, or the time I spend being a technology liaison for my building to help students and staff with troubleshooting, or that I'm a faculty union representative, or the hundreds of hours of professional development I've taken through the school and on my own time. They don't know that all those professional development hours don't count for my Tier 2 license renewal, and that I do them because I am dedicated, because I am qualified, and because of this, I deserve the respect of this legislative body and of Pelsby. Today, I'm asking you to see me and all that I have accomplished as a Tier 2 teacher. I'm asking you to keep the pathway that allows me after 3 years as a Tier 2 teacher to be allowed to earn a Tier 3 permanent license and to maintain the integrity of the tier licensure system. If you don't, you have marked the end of my teaching career. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Ideal Abdul, and on deck we have Annie Olson-Reiners.
Hi, I'm still trying to figure out the Zoom thing, I swear. I missed coming to the building. Madam Chair and members, many thanks for the opportunity to testify today. I too oppose this horrifying bill with the many other testifiers, along with the many other testifiers. My reason is simply from the parents' perspective. The teacher who suspended my child was licensed and followed all the so-called licensure pathway. Yet she was not trained in teaching high school students, nor did she understand my son's needs or our culture. My son's current charter school teacher did not follow the so-called licensure pathway. And I would take Asha over Kelly any day in any school. You see, Madam Chair and members, Asha is kind, caring, compassionate teacher who reflects my son, understands our culture, and most of all, sees my son's potential. I'm heartbroken about this bill. I'm mortified that this was written by a Black man who should at least at the very minimum understand how hard it is for Black and Brown students to learn. To be an effective and amazing teacher does not require one-size-fits-all pathway. Let me put this in another way that you all can all perhaps understand. All of the legislators in this committee are you're all House of Representatives, correct? But your journey and pathway to this place in this moment has been different from one another. Some of you are attorneys, some of you are teachers, some are mental health professionals, and others got here from different areas. Imagine if you were all required to take the same pathway to become a legislator. Majority of you would not be here. Life is not one size fits all. We must enhance, not restrict the pathway to finding knowledgeable and competent teachers who reflect our kids. This bill will hurt our children and ultimately our state.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Annie Olson-Reiners, and on deck, we have Josh Crossan.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and representatives from sunny northern Minnesota. My name is Annie Olson-Reiners, and I'm an elementary school principal. I grew up in the Twin Cities, attended the Perfect Center for Arts Education, St. Olaf College, served in the U.S. Peace Corps, and completed my master's degree at Hamline. Previous to this role, before I moved north, I served as an assistant principal at a performing arts charter school, high school, in downtown St. Paul. Prior to that, I was a Spanish immersion teacher. As old millennials, both working in public education, my husband and I decided that the best way for us to make a positive difference in the world, raise our family, and still be able to pay off our significant student loan debts was to move to Greater Minnesota, where the cost of living is more affordable and we have more trees. We love the community that we live in and serve. I currently serve as the elementary principal for Nashua-Kewaton Public Schools. As a building principal for 5 years, I have navigated the challenges of successfully recruiting and retaining talented teachers who are dedicated to continually improving education for our students. 4 years ago, just before the tiered system of teacher licensure went into effect, I traveled down to the Capitol to talk with some of you about a community expert teacher that I had who was not going to make the tier cut. She was invested in our students, a phenomenally nurturing and effective caregiver and teacher to our most medically fragile students. She's now not a teacher, she's a paramedic. Had HF 1376 been a reality at that time, I believe that we could have been able to support her through the teacher portfolio process. We could have helped her grow as an educator. Every teacher that I have ever met wants to be a good teacher. Passage of HF 1376 will help equip schools in Greater Minnesota to attract, grow, support, and retain teachers who are deeply invested in their community, in our students, and in continually improving their instruction and professional practice. Thank you for your service to our state and to our students.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Josh Crossan, and on deck, we have Carlandra Hines.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Josh Crossan. I'm with Ed Allies, an education advocacy group that fights to ensure that all kids have access to an excellent education. I'm here today to express strong concerns about HF 1376. The presentation from Pelsby was a strong defense for reverting back to a broken system, and it was quite impressive how they made it sound like it was progress. Only 5% of Minnesota's teachers are teachers of color, but over 20% of our Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers are teachers of color. As Pelsby's executive director, Alex Liuzzi, said at the December Pelsby board meeting, tiered licensure is having an effect on bringing teachers of color into the profession. Our tiered licensure system is working. We're diversifying our teacher workforce and removing barriers to teaching for our economically disadvantaged teachers and for our teachers of color. This bill, the bill we are considering today, will rebuild those barriers that have kept teachers of color out of our classroom. I've heard it is the intent of this body to increase the number of teachers of color to counteract the impact of racism and bias, but HF 1376 brings us back to a place where teachers of color are no longer welcome. In short, this bill reverses our efforts in making an anti-racist licensure system and forces teachers into financial hardship, making them retake unnecessary and often duplicative courses to stay in their profession. Supporters of this bill claim that our old system was sufficient, a system that has kept our teacher workforce at 95% white and that our legislative auditor called broken. Research shows that traditional teacher preparation serves more as a barrier to teaching, especially for teachers of color, and does not consistently improve the quality of teaching. I'm afraid of whom we've been intentionally keeping out for far too long. When it comes to the way we've been doing things, the data speaks for itself. Things are not going well for many of our kids. I ask that you reject this policy, knowing this bill's disproportionate impact. Anyone who desires to be anti-racist must vote no. I'll be available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Calandria Hines, and on deck, we have Jose Perez.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the House Education Policy Committee. My name is Dr. Carlandria Hines, and I am a principal at Richfield Middle School. Thank you for allowing me to come before you today to express my support for HF 1376. There are four areas within HF 1376 in which I would like to express my support. Line 18.28 and 19.24 support the licensing of field experts that either have a bachelor's or master's degree in the subject areas or have worked in the performing arts industry for 5 or more years. Due to the shortage of teachers in performing arts and career technical areas, it is critical that districts have the option to hire field experts when their efforts to find qualified licensed teachers fail. As a former principal at an arts high school, I know personally of the challenges that administrators experience searching for licensed teachers in the performing arts. In my current position, I know the challenges of finding licensed teachers for our CTE courses. These line items allow districts and building administrators to recruit field experts who would bring real-world experiences into the classroom. The time and effort district personnel and building administrators put into finding field experts should not be in vain. Districts and building administrators should continue their investment in newly licensed teachers and provide professional development to Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers that is designed to assist them in obtaining a higher tiered license, as identified in lines 17.8 and 20.12. It is important that districts do their due diligence in retaining Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers and assisting them in obtaining a Tier 3 license. Thank you for your time and attention to my support for HF 1376.
Thank you for your testimony, Dr. Hines, and my apologies for not referring to you as Dr. Hines to begin with. Up next, we have Jose Perez, and on deck, we have Peng Yang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Jose Perez. I live in Hugo, and I'm a student at St. Paul College. I'm a 2019 graduate of High School for Recording Arts in St. Paul. I strongly oppose House File 1376. I believe this bill would make it harder to attract and keep teachers of color who are often crucial in helping students of color, like myself, reach our full potential. I spent ninth grade at a high school where I failed most of my classes. None of my teachers were of color. I decided to transfer to High School for Recording Arts, which serves about 300 students, most of whom have struggled in other schools. For me, this meant a trip of 2.5 hours each way every day, taking 2 buses and a train. I've made that sacrifice for 3 years because of the chance to learn with passionate teachers who re-engaged me and other students in learning. One of them was Ms. Hobbins, a Black University of Chicago educated math teacher with amazing results with second chance students like me. Hobbins holds a Tier 2 teaching license. If 1376 passes, Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers would face huge new barriers to remain teachers. And I have a few questions. When so many students of color already struggle, why would the state make it more difficult for talented teachers to stay in teaching? Why would the state make it harder for schools to hire and keep some of their strongest teachers so that struggling students like myself can benefit? And why would the state discourage students from the most racially diverse licensure tiers from staying in teaching? Why would the state make changes that would likely reduce the number of teachers of color? If I had fewer Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers, I know I wouldn't be here speaking with you today. Thousands of other students on the pathway to college and career success may still be struggling. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Peng Yang, and on deck, we have Deb Hinton.
My name is Bang Yang. I am a Tier 3 Hmong Heritage Language teacher in the Osceola Area Schools and the lead teacher for the National Coalition of Hmong Language Teachers. I am the Minnesota Council on the Teaching of Culture and Language 2019 Teacher of the Year. In 1997, when I finished my student teaching undergrad degree, I struggled to pass my teaching exams and eventually passed it on the third try. On the other hand, a handful of my heritage peers gave up. In the last 3 years, I've been working with Heritage Language Assistant Professor from UW-Whitewater, Dr. Jenna Cushing-Lubner, to revitalize Hmong language reclamation with teachers nationally. We know our Tier 1 and 2 heritage teachers have the heart and desire to teach. They make a huge difference in the classroom because of their lived experiences and know students and families best. The assets they bring are unmatched. However, what Tier 1 and 2 heritage teachers lack are the confidence and skills to pass exams that are rooted in tests that measure one's English linguistic competencies, assessing heritage teachers of their deficits, not their assets. My teachers remain in those tiers because of barriers like the content and pedagogy assessments. What they need most is support to strengthen their skills. We need to give our heritage teachers the ability to succeed in the profession. Instead of support, this bill puts stricter limits on how long they can teach, limiting renewals from 3 times to 2 times for Tier 2 teachers, and eliminating automatic renewals for Tier 1 teachers of color.
30 seconds.
Let my colleagues stay in their passion. Thank you for the opportunities to speak with you today.
Thank you for your testimony. Up next, we have Deb Hinton, and on deck, we have Tim Lutz.
Good afternoon, Chair Richardson and members of the committee. I am Deb Hinton, Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony that is also supported by MREA, AMSD, MSBA, and C. Tiered licensure has been effective for bringing qualified content professionals into classrooms as leaders struggle with deep shortages of Tier 3 and 4 teachers, particularly in specialty areas. Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers provide career and technical options for students, along with classes in the arts, business, foreign language, and more. Without effective Tier 1 and 2 pathways, opportunities for students will diminish. Businesses often partner with schools to find instructors and create programs between the schools and industry that assist in creating a pipeline of interested students into their fields. The tiered licensure system is working for public schools, students, businesses, and communities. The proposed elimination of unlimited renewals for Tier 1 teachers and only two renewals instead of three for Tier 2 teachers are areas of concern. If these provisions move forward, we anticipate shortage areas going unfilled at even greater rates when these teachers learn they may invest their time only to be unable to continue their practice. There is also a potential loss of teachers of color holding Tier 1 and Tier 2 licenses, resulting in a regression of our efforts to increase the number of BIPOC teachers in the classroom. Finally, the proposed changes remove timelines necessary for districts to have their applications for Tier 1 licenses approved by PELSB. We greatly appreciate the workload of the board, yet districts need to know on the first day of school if their application has been approved, not 30 days later or longer. While waiting, districts often hire substitutes with a content area without the content area licensure instead of a professional with extensive knowledge in the content area. This causes a depletion of resources school districts simply cannot afford. Thank you for your consideration of this testimony and your service to our state.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, we are going to end public testimony with Tim Lutz, and I will ask the remaining individuals to please submit written testimony. We have a couple of member questions. If we are able to get back to public testimony, we will definitely do that. Tim Lutz.
Thank you for this opportunity, Chair Richardson, to speak today on this bill. My name is Tim Lutz. I'm the superintendent of area schools in Northwestern Minnesota.
Mr. Lutz, I think that your audio has muted. I think we may have lost Mr. Lutz. So with that, we will have Anne Dublin. We'll let you testify quickly before going to member questions.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and the committee members. My name is Anne Dublin. I'm a Tier 2 teacher at Anoka Hennepin. My CTE license is currently in medical careers. I teach two courses to high school students that allow them to become EMTs and also earn 9 college credits. Students from my class have delivered babies on the freeway, and they've also helped countless car accident victims. So proposed changes to the House File 1376 would be catastrophic to CTE teachers like myself. Eliminating the option to move from Tier 2 to Tier 3 through successful years of experience teaching will cause us to lose highly successful teachers across the state and would likely lose programs that meet the needs of our workforce. My position in the school district and with concurrent enrollment requires me to maintain my certifications. I have to complete the 24 additional hours of professional development that probationary teachers do. I get observed three times a year by the Anoka Tech, and I get observed an additional three times a year by my administrator. I've met minimum faculty qualifications to teach at post-secondary, which includes pedagogical competence. After many years as a probationary teacher, if pedagogy was a concern, I would not have been hired for the last 6 years. CTE teachers don't always have programs in many of our areas, and there is not an alternative prep provider for medical careers.
30 seconds.
Portfolio is an option, but I would have to complete 3 portfolios. I ask you not to support the changes proposed in eliminating years of successful teaching, moving from tier 2 to tier 3. This causes me to lose my job every 2 years.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll move to member discussion and questions. Representative Ertl.
Sorry for the little delay there. Well, first of all, I think that there are many good things in this bill, but I have some major concerns and questions. From the beginning, I had concerns about pedagogy and preparation, I mean, way back before the tiered licensure happened. But over time, it's been assuaged a bit. But this bill repeals the requirement that Tier 3 licensed applicants pass a pedagogical and content exam, and that, again, was one of my main concerns. There are methods to block effective Tier 2 teachers from advancing to Tier 3. I'm concerned about shortages in education right now. Actually, we could end that problem and the need for the tiered system by making the profession more attractive through higher salaries, but that's not going to happen in the near future. The tiered system is what we have to address shortages. We have a bill to offer incentives for more teachers of color. It's an important bill, but now we are considering a bill that potentially will reduce teachers of color. Right now, 30% of our students are BIPOC, less than 5% of our teachers, but a growing number of those teachers are in the tier 1 and tier 2 tiers where the barriers are being increased. We require mentoring in this when we don't have a required mentorship program in the state. Of course, I do have a bill that would fix that. I received a call from a special education teacher today, a director actually, that said she had 4 openings, but she can't fill. There's a concern that this bill will deepen that problem. And so I don't know if we have time today, but I would like Felsby to answer, you know, what is the problem that we're trying to solve here? Is there a concern that this is going to lead to fewer BIPOC teachers? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ertl. Very quickly, Ms. Bailey, would you like to respond to the question?
Yeah, so a couple of things you mentioned. One is, and this came up in the testimony as well, the concern over shortages and difficulty filling. This does not remove or change at all the good cause exemption. So in all of the instances that were shared where people are struggling to fill it, and in those cases, good cause exemption would allow those additional renewals for those tier 1 and tier 2. So this does not change that. I want to be clear about that. The other piece is you mentioned, you know, what's the thing we're trying to change with regard to BIPOC teachers? And as it currently exists, absolutely right. We have seen, a slight increase in teachers brought in on those tier 1 and tier 2, but they are not required to have any particular support or professional development. And we know, we published this in our supply and demand report, retention is the largest issue when it comes to increasing our larger percentage, right? So that's part of why this bill adds that additional support. The other piece is, as the system currently exists, what we're kind of projected to do is to have these teachers, increase on tier 1 and tier 2 while their white counterparts have these longer term tier 3 and 4. And they may move up or they may not, because there's a lot of factors in that, even in that existing, you know, moving up from tier 2 to tier 3 pathway right now. So what we are doing is building in something that ensures that they have, we're proposing something that would ensure they have the training and the support to get that tier 3 license so that they can stay in the field and have the professional training to really succeed in the profession and thrive there. So we're not trying to push people out of the tiers, we're trying to push them up the tiers so that they actually can stay and our profession can grow.
Representative Ertl.
Thank you, that's all I have.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very concerned that we have not
had enough time to ask questions of many of the testifiers. Will there be an opportunity Wednesday for us to at least question the author of this proposal? Because I know many of us, at least on my team, have questions in regarding this proposal. But if time allows, I'd like to ask Mr. Crossan, as long as he might still be on the Zoom.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Crossan, will you explain how this proposal takes licenses away from certain teachers?
Yes, absolutely. Sorry. Sorry, Madam Chair. Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Representative Erickson. Currently, Tier 2 teachers have the opportunity to enter the profession through an array of options, like having a master's degree, completing assessments, being currently enrolled in preparation or completing preparation. This takes away those options. So we heard from a testifier, Anthony Holloway, who finished his teacher preparation but didn't complete his student teaching. He's been in the classroom for 10 years. Because he hasn't completed that student teaching, he's no longer either currently in preparation or completed preparation, so he would no longer be eligible for a Tier 2 license. He's expecting his Tier 3 license next year, but this bill would take away his Tier 2 license. And this is the case for hundreds of other educators who are in this similar situation, maybe thousands, who would no longer be eligible for a Tier 2 license if this bill passes.
Representative Erickson, just really quickly to your question as well in terms of time, we do have Friday reserved if we need to come back to continue our discussion as well. And being that we're only laying over the bill, there will be opportunity for more discussion. And we are also at 2:31. So I am going to give Representative Frazier a final word before we have to move on.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'll be quick because we're going to lay it over, but Representative Erickson, I am, as the author, you can call me anytime. I will be open to have that conversation. You know how to contact me, so I'm looking forward to the conversation. And I do believe, I did state the number, 539 people would be impacted to that number that Mr. Crossan laid out. It's not thousands. We know the number. We know who they are. We can identify those individuals to make sure we help support them when they need that help. And I believe Pelsby is working with your group to help work with some of those individuals. So that is there. I'm just looking forward to the continued conversation. I love the passion for those individuals that made some statements. You haven't had a chance to get to know me yet. I'm looking forward to getting to know you and talk more about this. So looking forward to that. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. So with that, we will lay over House File 1376. And there being no further business before the committee, we are adjourned.